Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Another insanity sports day. In 2 hours, the New York Mets will fight for their baseball lives in Game 5 of the NLCS at Citi Field against the Dodgers. And then a few hours after that, the New York Yankees are going to try to erase what happened last night in Cleveland by taking a commanding 3-1 lead on the Guardians. And oh, by the way, the New York Jets are playing Sunday night football against the Pittsburgh Steelers, and the New York Giants are welcoming back Saquon Barkley.
Boo!
You getting your booze ready?
Boo!
Very nice. Now, I hope this works for any Yankee fan that's upset. Because you have every right to be upset. It was a bad loss last night. To me, Aaron Boone getting mad always puts a smile on my face for whatever reason. Do you feel that way at all?
Yes, because it's the only times I'm always reminded, oh, yeah, I do like Aaron Boone.
Oh, yeah.
As a manager. Yeah, he's got that fire in him. All
he's
angry.
Got fire. Now, he was angry during the game yesterday. I think one case was the Juan Soto pitch clock violation. And I think there was something else he was barking about.
I think it was one of the two challenges they used.
Maybe. I can't even remember, but Angry Boone is always fun, but I really like Feisty Boone at post-game press conferences. So we'll play the question so you can hear it, but in case it's tough to hear, so you know what you're looking for, basically the reporter says, did the Yankees think, this thing's over? That's what he asked Aaron Boone. Aaron did not like the question, and he let you know about it.
The bench also might have felt, we've got this in the bag, so to speak.
That's, come on, no. Got this in the bag. Stop it with that. That's, you know, I mean, it's the playoffs, man. You hit tying home runs and go ahead homers. You know, that's what it looks like. Like, yeah, I mean, you never have anything in the bag in the playoffs. No, it's, you never take anything for granted. But you're going to celebrate big moments all the time like that.
You got this in the bag.
That's a stupid question.
It's a horrible question.
And the idea, you pointing to them going nuts after Stanton's homer? That's called being a human being.
Yeah, no, and Boone's right. When you hit a big home run in the playoffs, even if it doesn't win you a game because you're on the road, you don't know if it's going to win you the game. It gave you the lead. You're going to get very excited. I thought the way Giancarlo Stanton got excited was so cool, though it almost backfired because he almost missed first base, which caused the Guardians to challenge.
I mean, what was that, Buck with Musgrove? I mean, that was horrible.
Oh, you didn't like the challenge?
It was embarrassing. You just have back-to-back homers hit off of you, and you pull it. Ooh, he didn't touch first base.
Yeah, I'll tell you why I respect it. And I guess I'm consistent on this because I liked when Buck did it with Joe Musgrove. Desperate times call for desperate measures. And if you're allowed, because remember, you get two challenges in October. And at that point, they hadn't used any. And it's the eighth inning. So if you're Stephen Vogt and you're like, I got nothing to lose. Why not?
There was basically a chalk outline of Giancarlo's foot on the base. That's why it was a ridiculous challenge.
But you got nothing to lose. Obviously, they thought for a second that Giancarlo, because what happened, I mean, obviously everybody saw the home run, but he was turning towards the dugout to celebrate, and he almost like was walking backwards. He was doing like a moonwalk. I'm trying to imitate it, and I look.
Don't do that.
I see myself in the reflection of the studio because we have these glass like windows, and as I look at myself, I'm like, my God, I am such a tool.
Stanton's foot, by the way, was more on it than Naylor's foot was on that incredible play at first base.
No, you're right. You're right. But asking, did you think you had it in the bag, is a dumb, dumb question. Now, what you can say, because I do think this is human nature, and I'll bring it back to a regular season Met game from 2 years ago. The Mets were playing again. Just hear me out. It's all going to make sense.
Okay.
I just like giving comparisons. You want to know why? We have an audience, and some in the audience are like, I don't care about the Yankees.
It relates to both.
So I'm giving the Met fan a chance to be involved while I talk about the Yankees. I'll do the same thing later when we're talking about the Mets.
By the way, the Met fans will have plenty of time to be involved with the Yankees.
With what? Playing golf?
Watching us.
Oh, okay. I was going to say. You can't be talking Subway Series at this point. But the Mets had a game against the Giants a couple years ago where Edwin Diaz got a huge double play with, I think, a two-run lead. I think it was a very similar situation. And there were two outs and nobody on. And it was late at night, West Coast game. And I remember even as a fan almost like relaxing just a little bit. Like, okay, two outs, nobody on. We just got a big double play. That's it. Puts the next guy on. And then Jock Peterson hit a game-tying two-run home run. And I think Diaz admitted after the game, there's a part of you that lets down. You just got the big double play. There's two outs and nobody on. And there's like this minor letdown. That's not the same as having something in the bag.
Yeah.
I do think with Weaver in the ninth inning, he got a huge double play on Josh Naylor. You have a two-run lead. There's two outs and nobody on. You wonder if the conviction in your pitches, that's a term he uses, not just me, if it changes because you're like, ah, deep breath, okay.
Yeah, you got the big out. It convicted me. I went right to my air fryer to make a little snack after that double play.
You were getting that cocky?
Yeah. I dipped some Oreos in some pancake batter. I was making a little air fried Oreo.
And you still ate it even after the game-tying home run?
Miserably, yeah.
So
they were good.
Now it became angry hate as opposed to angry eating as opposed to celebratory eating.
You know what's funny? I still had confidence after that moment the Yankees were winning in extra innings.
I can,
when Avila's fat ass came in, I said, you know what? They're going to hit him up and down. Holmes was coming in. I really thought because of the length of the pen, the Yankees would still be fine.
No, I think you had the bullpen edge because think about it. Cleveland had already used all their top relievers. Emmanuel Clase was out of the game. They had already used Hunter Gaddis. They'd already used Tim Herron. They already used Cade Smith. Like, those are all
have
the
you heard
big
of
four.
Those guys?
Have I?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. I don't know. TBS spent all night telling us how great their bullpen was. So I just want to make sure you heard of it.
I'm glad you're falling into the mix of being angry at the broadcasters
can't
when
take.
You lose.
What was that? I don't know. What? Who cares about Cleveland? Last time it was a Cleveland infomercial. The fans, the bullpen.
They're trying to inform people because 80% of the audience have no idea who Cade Smith is. You didn't know who Cade Smith was till the series started.
Dude, the way they talked every inning about those four guys in the bullpen, you would have thought it was Wetland and Mariano coming. Can we calm down a little bit?
Let's go to John in Scotch Plains. How you doing today, John?
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Good. What's up?
Good. Hey, I don't have any, like, big hot take. All I'm saying is, for Sean. Sean.
Yeah.
If we go up by, like, two or three runs tonight, can you please stay off Twitter?
No.
You were the Judas. Please do it.
No.
You were the kryptonite.
No.
As soon as you had to give your little hot take about doing the sweep, we freaking lost. So can you please just stay off Twitter and stop touching the money?
You think
go
I have
your air fryer? Make some more Oreos.
I might, I might. Do you think I have anything to do with what goes on in the field? Touching the money? Am I not allowed a fan to be a fan and celebrate and be confident? Sometimes I hate this town because if you're overconfident and cocky, it's don't touch the money, don't touch the money. But then if you're like beaten down and negative, it's how could you not believe? I believe right now. I didn't touch any money.
But you don't understand why a Yankee fan upset at you for putting out a video, which you've already done in the past and it backfired, of a team sweeping, so you have a broom out there.
Yeah.
And I've also seen some of your other tweets from last night. I mean, first of all, Artemi Panarin had a hat trick?
It was great.
I had no idea.
Five goals, yep.
But the other thing you said is you mocked Cleveland's home field advantage.
Yeah, freezing cold takes got a hold of that. It has no home field advantage.
I mean,
sterile.
It was not sterile.
Sterile. I mean, barely a hum from that crap.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet, and the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Aloe, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
When the big Christmas hit that game-tying home run, you thought there was barely a hum in that crowd?
I mean, look, it was a loud crowd. It was nothing like they made it seem.
Big Christmas!
That's not Arrowhead in January. I'm sorry, folks.
So even a fellow Yankee fan politely asking you,
yeah, I'm not staying off Twitter.
Can you cut, you don't have to just stay off Twitter, but cut out the rhetoric that this is basically a cakewalk?
Jinxes don't exist. I have nothing to do with what happens on the field. And one way or another, when the Yankees win tonight, there will be another cleaning utensil brought out at Sean Morash on Twitter. And so you're going to like it.
You don't believe in jinxes, right?
Nope.
That's what you said?
No jinxes. Doesn't exist.
It's interesting because when I was on Sean's Twitter account, I saw this. And please don't respond. I'm going to let Tommy respond because it's about him.
Mic's off.
Quote, the Mets haven't won a game and have been outscored 18-2 since Positive Tommy vowed to help the Jets with his positive vibes. That cannot be a coincidence. If I were a Met fan, I'd be furious with the guy who claimed to be the fan base's leader and abandoned ship. So, Tommy, you just heard Sean's point about, hey, jinxes don't exist, all that. Based on what he just said and what he tweeted about you, hypocrisy much?
Massive hypocrisy. And the beauty of this is I actually agree with Sean. There is no boogeyman. There are no jinxes. But Sean likes to move the goalposts around, and he's sicked his Ranger followers on me because I've gotten a few tweets about it. This is all about Sean trying to take Jet misery, couple it with Met misery, and torpedo Positive Tommy. And we're not going to allow that because Positive Tommy will stand up for the little brother, and he will inject positivity into fan bases that need it. Just like I did with the Mets, I will do it with the Jets.
And I want to say again, as a Jet fan, thank you, Positive Tommy.
You're welcome. Looking forward to Sunday night.
So now, having you on my side with the football team is the weirdest thing ever, but I kind of like it. So, Sean, you just said that jinxes don't exist.
They don't.
Then what the hell was that tweet about with Positive Tommy?
Unfortunately, you could learn a thing or two weekdays, 2 to 6:25 typically here on Evan and Tiki, and I learned something on Tuesday that I had not considered.
Go ahead.
And that happened when Joe B. was on.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe B. said something about Aaron Rodgers, and he did his whole, uniform, you could change this, you could change that shtick, but Joe B. used a word I hadn't considered. Jet karma has now ruined Aaron Rodgers.
Yes, he did say that.
And I couldn't help but think, did Jet karma
ruin
Positive Tommy and the vibes he was bringing the Mets? So I don't think that's a jinx necessarily, but more a greater being out there called Jet Karma.
No, because I love Beningo to death, but the whole reason for Positive Tommy is to reverse a lot of what the negativity that has existed in these fan bases before. I've proved it here with the Mets, and I will prove it with the Jets.
Tommy, I actually think that's admirable, and I agree, and I like the way you're looking about that. But sometimes there are certain things that can't be changed.
I disagree.
And the Jets karma may be that thing.
Well, this is going to be the ultimate test now, isn't it? Now, you're claiming the Jets are going to ruin Positive Tommy. I would tell you that Fox ruined Positive Tommy. Because for those that didn't see it, the other night on the Fox pregame show for Mets Dodgers, they were doing like a little video package of the Mets season. And obviously a big part of the Mets season is that they were bad for a while. So they wanted to take audio clips of people talking about how bad things were.
Oh,
tell me if this voice sounds familiar.
0-5 feels like rock bottom.
0-5 the first week.
This is ridiculous.
Seriously, I've had it.
This is ridiculous. Seriously, I've had it.
This is ridiculous.
Seriously, I've had it.
Now,
I've had it.
I don't know. We have a lot of people here at WFAN who work here. Does that voice sound like Chris McMonagle?
No, he's a deeper voice.
Does that voice sound like Greg Giannotti?
Definitely not.
Does that voice sound like Boomer Esiason?
No.
Does that voice sound like me?
No, I could definitely say it doesn't.
Does that voice sound like Sal Licata?
No, not Sal.
Who do you think that voice sounds like?
Play it again.
Hold on.
Hold on.
The worst is he has to play it.
This is ridiculous!
Seriously, I've had it.
So,
Wait. Can I get a voicemail? Tommy, can you say to the mic, this is ridiculous, seriously, I've had it?
This is ridiculous, seriously, I've had it.
Oh, it's a match.
Yeah, it's Tommy.
So Tommy Lugauer, Positive Tommy, was featured on the Fox pregame show saying negative stuff about the New York Mets. Fox killed Positive Tommy!
Fox killed... Tom Rinaldi killed Positive Tommy!
Tom Rinaldi, you son of a bee! You have destroyed the legacy and the name value and the reputation of Positive Tommy by exposing him to the national audience being negative about the Mets!
If I was in Tulsa, Oklahoma, and I heard that, I would say, wow, that guy's really negative about the Mets. I've had it. He must have given up.
Your thoughts?
War has been waged against Positive Tommy here. I believe there is internal sabotage here at WFAN. I believe that, much like a great poet once said, 50 Cent, many men wish death upon me. There are not just one, I believe multiple people here that don't like the success of Positive Tommy. They don't like positivity in their sports talk, and I believe there is internal sabotage here at WFAN. I believe there are multiple people here working together that sent Fox those clips clearly out of context. I'm not even talking about the Mets. And even if you want to argue that I said something negative about them early in the season, remember Positive Tommy was born Memorial Day weekend, so even if you want to go with that stance here, Fox had to get those clips from somebody. This is eternal sabotage here at WFAN, trying to torpedo me.
Wow.
So my followers, we must rally against those who are trying
followers.
To stop us.
He's like a cult leader.
And if I may for a second, and this is no disrespect, we're trying to ruin Positive Tommy and his success. Want to remind me who's here till 7:30 tonight? It's us, right? We're all here.
Yeah, so what does that mean?
I haven't seen Tommy do a bridge show ahead of the Yankees in a long term. What kind of success?
You're saying you got dumped?
Yes.
Don't worry. He'll be doing plenty of bridges to Brooklyn Net basketball before you know it. And I'm sure he'll be excited about that. All right, here's the injury report on Ben Simmons.
So, again, somebody had to be motivated to do this.
Are you accusing somebody of it? Are you accusing us of it?
Who could that be?
I think that there are multiple people involved here. The first person I'm going to accuse of is Pete Hoffman. Pete Hoffman, who produces the Rico, he produces BT and Sal.
Pete Hoffman, not a fan of Positive Tommy. That part is true. Nah, because I'll tell you why. Because when doing the Rico all year, like there are different kinds of fans, right? I wouldn't say I'm a Positive Met fan. I think that would be a lie. But I certainly had more optimism about this team coming into the year, which I argue with you guys.
You're a hopeful Met fan.
I'm a hopeful Met fan. I think I'm a realistic Met fan, but I can't be defined by positive or negative, in my opinion. It depends on the moment.
I actually agree with that.
Pete Hoffman represented the Positive Met fan on the Rico, and I think he felt that when Positive Tommy was born, basically Loogie was stealing Hoff's gimmick. So he's never said that to me, but I've gotten the impression that Hoff is like, Positive Tommy. What about me? I've been positive.
Interesting.
So I can see that. Like, that's not a bad idea.
And a little inside baseball here. A lot of the networks will reach out to us here as a station, the producers, to send them audio clips from hosts or listeners about stuff like that. So Hoffman has access to Fox. But Yoda said in The Phantom Menace, there is a master and there is an apprentice. And I believe that Pete Hoffman is working for somebody. So I have to ask Evan.
Whose side is he on?
Did you put Pete Hoffman up to this?
Me?
Just asking the questions.
Evan.
Evan, I don't want to believe this, but you just did the Aaron Rodgers thing.
What's that?
Me?
I promise you I had nothing to do with it. But I will admit this. I'm a loyal listener to WFAN. I listen a lot. I listen more than maybe you realize. And I can identify when Positive Tommy used those terms that you should play one more time for the audience in case you're just tuning in. This was on the Fox pregame show two nights ago.
0-5 feels like rock bottom.
0-5 the first week.
This is ridiculous!
Seriously, I've had it.
Here's what's funny, and I commend Fox for this. What have I told you, and I know for a fact, that when Gary Cohen made those comments in the game against the Detroit Tigers, the doubleheader game, I stayed late that day because I needed to see the rest of the game. I'm a loyal Met fan who didn't want to be in my car, even for an April game. So I heard that, and Tommy was on the radio saying that during the moments of that no-hit bid by the Tigers. It all happened on the same day, and I remember you being upset the way I was upset, And you said that on that show. So I can confirm that those words out of your mouth is not only not out of context, it's completely accurate to what the Mets were dealing with on that given day when Gary made those comments.
So number one, you can confirm that this was before Positive Tommy was born.
Yes.
Okay, that's number one. Number two is, you're the only person here at WFAN that has claimed to know when this happened. And you love to save tweets. You even have that Jalen Brunson tweet of mine that's on a sweatshirt.
T-shirt.
And I think, or whatever, T-shirt.
It's on a sweatshirt too
and
now.
And I think deep down, Hoff, Evan, the entire Rico Bronya podcast is going after Positive Tommy
Never.
Here. Those are my accusations.
I deny those accusations. And think about it. Why would I come after Positive Tommy when I begged him to join the Jets? I begged you. I want you to help the Jets. We got a big game Sunday night against the Steelers.
But what has that caused? People like Sean and others to get mad at Positive Tommy.
Nobody's mad.
Yes, they are.
Well, I'm not.
You
Met fans have turned on me.
Yes. Why have they turned on me? Because partially you are perpetuating that, and otherwise people get negative and they want to blame somebody. So it starts to add up a little bit here. Evan, in the same week that Fox has this feature, asked me, which I'm happy to give my positivity to the Jets, but he does that, and then there's this feature. So maybe you are the mastermind here.
I'm the mastermind. Mm-hmm. I am going to deny this. I'm going to say it's not true, but one last question to you. You are a budding superstar in this business. Some may say you're a generational talent.
Thanks.
Okay?
Future of the station.
I wasn't talking to you, Sean, but I like you too.
Oh, my bad.
When you heard that you were on the Fox pregame show, was that not, despite what you said, a proud moment for you in your broadcast career?
No, I was furious.
You were furious.
I was furious because of what I said here. I said it was immediately, I said, this is internal sabotage. This is war waged against Positive Tommy. And this is somebody at WFAN trying to torpedo the rise in fame and success of Positive Tommy.
Well, look, if you think Positive Tommy is now dead because he was so negative on the Fox pregame show, that's okay. Because joining us right now is Positive Nancy. Positive Nancy, we need your positivity going into Game 5. How are we feeling?
Okay. How's everybody doing over there?
Amazing. Wonderful. Amazing.
Yeah. It's like, it hasn't been easy, you know, the last couple of nights. But I'm going to stay positive like Tommy and like Howie. He made a lot of sense. And also, I want to say, I believe in Positive Tommy. I'm on your side. So there's two of us there, okay? And Evan, we don't have any other choices. It's do or die tonight. I'm not ready for the Mets season to be over. I don't think you are either.
I am not.
Positive vibes only. Right, Tommy?
You are right,
Positive Nancy.
There is an issue, and thank you for the call, Nancy. And we do want to say stay tuned for Baseball Night in New York, presented by Tri-State Cadillac, coming up next on SNY. Obviously, a very different, unique day at SNY with the Met game being at 5 o'clock. I don't know if I'm alone on this. Tell me if I'm wrong, Teak. Positive Nancy didn't actually sound positive.
No, she did. She sounded depressed.
See? There wasn't conviction in her voice, bro.
Well, I'm trying to think now, because I don't want to blame Nancy. Nancy seems so nice.
Yeah.
Committed.
Yeah.
Part of Tommy's created cult.
Created cult?
That he's bringing people into and anointing them, whatever he calls Nancy.
Positive posse.
Yeah. I'm just wondering now. Because she's so negative. She sounded so negative.
She did not sound convicted in anything she said.
Right.
Kind of depressed me, actually.
If Tommy got a little full of himself.
Oh.
And once you start bringing on too many.
Yeah.
And you start spreading the juju out. So it's not just your juju. It's your juju and Nancy's juju and Bob's juju and Susan's juju and Penelope's juju. And,
wow.
And
I like
Meredith juju, Lola's juju.
That's a lot of juju.
Steve's juju, Andy's juju. All the jujus that you dispersed out, Tommy, it negated yours.
Oh.
Wow. Overexpansion, T.
Yes.
Well, I've got.
That's what happens. Franchises do it all the time.
I do have good news, and this may surprise you, Tiki Barber. This may surprise you, Positive Tommy. And this may well surprise Sean Morash and the rest of the audience. When we come back, not because it's a vibe, not because I want to say it, not because it's a cool thing to do, I will tell you why the New York Mets are going to win today, and this series is not over. And this isn't coming from Positive Evan. This is coming from Evan's got a brain. He's going to use some logic, and I'm going to give you some reasons on why it does not end tonight. So, in about an hour and a half, the Mets are going to play the Dodgers again at Citi Field. I know a lot of you guys are on your way over there right now to Citi Field. Maybe you had this planned out for the last couple of days. Maybe you decided to go spur of the moment because this is not a stunner, Tiki, but the prices have dropped. Mm-hmm. So you can go to this game today, and you don't have to mortgage your house. Right. So that's certainly a positive.
And that's I guess it's a good thing, but it's not for the reason that we thought earlier this week, which was the prices were dropping because people were looking forward to these potential Subway World Series.
Now yes.
The prices are dropping because people think it's over.
Yeah, I think it's people think it's over. People are sort of, not most people, but some are fair weather, and they're like, I'm not going on a Friday at 5 o'clock to freeze my butt off when I'm down 3-1. Or some just have a radio show that stays on the air until 7:30 and they've got no other choice. like me.
Like you?
Like me. I'm not leaving early. I'm going to be hanging out with you guys all the way through. We may see the death of a season together. Thank you, Sean. Sean got me a cup of water because I'm still feeling like ill from being at Citi Field the last two nights. I think being around people with germs, I think the cold weather, and I think screaming in anger when your team can't get a big hit, I think that's contributed to like my throat
right.
feeling.
You're probably not ill. You're probably just worn out. And so once your body starts to get worn down,
yeah.
you get more susceptible to being ill.
That's right.
It's a good thing you're not going.
That's right.
You get to go home and go to sleep on a Friday night.
Well, that's usually not going to happen either because I'm going to stay here until the Met game ends. Then I'm going to record a Rico Bronya from here. Then I'm going to go home. Hopefully my kids are still up. But if they're sleeping, then I'm going to start the Yankee game on DVR. So no, the night doesn't get much easier. But I do want to tell you why I have a sense of positivity going into Game 5. And I've got two reasons. Number one is going to be the baseball reason. Number two is going to be the emotional reason. So, Tiki, would you like to hear the baseball reason first or the emotional reason?
Let's hear the emotional reason. We know the baseball reasons, or maybe the baseball reasons won't be correct. But the emotional reasons will be correct because they're your emotional reasons.
Thank you. I can't see a season like this, a season that really has been magical and unique on every level, ending without a whimper. And I think losing in five in a lot of ways, especially with the way they've lost three of these games, like they could lose a close game today, but the three other losses they've had have been very, very, they've been blown out essentially.
Yes.
When they lost in five to the Kansas City Royals, or they lost in five to the New York Yankees, I think everyone knows all those games were close. Literally. So it's not as if the series result really told you how mismatched they were. They could have won basically all of the games they played. Yankee fans certainly know that. Game one was a Met game to have had. Game five, the clincher, was a game they could have had. I mean, really, other than game two, the Clemens bat throw game, that turned out to be closer than really what the final score. The final score says it was closer than the actual game. Right. Jay Payton hit a meaningless home run late, but whatever, I don't want to get into the thing on that. They were closely fought series. It would surprise me, Tiki, if this magical ride ends with,
a whimper.
Yeah.
Right. It ends without any kind of, I don't want to say fight, because they've been fighting this whole time, but if it ends just kind of weakly to a superior opponent. Because I think that's been the issue with the Mets. It's why they've been so entertaining, is that despite maybe being overmatched on paper with some of these, not forget these series, but the games going back into the regular season, they always found a way to win and find a way to be one of the best teams at the second half of the season. And so to not do what we've seen for the last 2 months at the most critical moment, I think it would be disappointing.
Yes.
I think more than anything, it would be disappointing. Obviously, you'd remember this season for all the hype and the oh my God and everything else that happened during the year, but it would just feel disappointing if they get blown out again to just not feel in competition even close to with the LA Dodgers.
Absolutely. And I think that there are examples. There's no perfect example to this, but I give you one. I'm shrugging because it's a freaking Nets example. And I hate giving Nets examples because I feel like Loogie looks at me like, you got 12 heads. There's 12 mm-hmm. other people that like the Nets, you idiot. But they had a magical year in 2019.
The Nets still in the league?
They were in the league at that point, Boom. It was the year before they got Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving. But they had a really fun season. Like, it was very similar to what the Mets have done. They were the cardiac kids. Yeah. They made a lot of comebacks. They got off to a terrible start. And they had all these great wins that, believe it or not, I still remember 5 years later. And so they make the playoffs. They're in the first round against Philadelphia. They win game one, and they lose heartbreakers in games three and four. at home. And they're down 3-1, similar to the Mets. And I remember in the 3.5 minutes we spent talking about the Nets series on WFAN that day, Beningo said, "How do you feel, bro?" And I said the exact same thing I'm saying to you right now, which kind of scares me. I said, "Joe, this has been such a fun team, and I've had such a joy watching this team. I can't imagine that they're just going to lose meekly in 5. And they did. They didn't just lose game 5 in Philadelphia. They got blown off the court. And to answer your question, yeah, it put a cloud over that season for a while. Like, when I think back to it, I think about the fun. I think about some of the wins. But then I'm like, wow, they went out without a whimper. So you're right that sometimes the way you lose can kind of cloud over things. And I want to be fair. I used a net example. Let me give you a Nick example. The first year that they made the playoffs in the Tom Thibodeau era. Remember the COVID-ish year when they played Atlanta?
Right.
Dude, they had a great second half. That team was so much fun. We here. And you could argue they overachieved, kind of like the Mets, right? And then they lost to Atlanta, and they went out kind of meekly. They didn't just lose to Atlanta. It was like, eh.
Yeah, and it looked overmatched. It looked like they didn't belong on the court. And that's what it feels like these last couple of games with the Dodgers. It's like you don't believe on the field, but that's not true. Because we saw it all season long. So what are we believing? Are we believing what the Dodgers did to us, or you know, from a Mets fan perspective, or are we believing what we saw all year long?
Right.
And that's why it gets hard to compartmentalize what this season actually was for the Mets.
Yeah, and I can't. Like, you asked that question to Howie, if you missed it, or rewind on the Odyssey app to about 2:45. Hey, how will this season be remembered? I'll be the first to tell you, I don't know how to answer that yet. Mm-hmm. Let me see how it ends, and then let me see how the weeks and months go by and how it makes me feel. Because I think the way you feel in the moment, I can tell you right now, is I'm going to be pissed. I'm going to be sad. That's going to be my immediate moment, and there's nothing wrong with that. Like, you have a right to be upset when your team's season ends, mad, angry, sad, whatever it is. But I also understand, and you tried to make the point to me yesterday, and I get it. Hey, give it some time. You may look back at this fondly. They've got a great future. This may happen. You may end up being right. I may sit there in January doing a Rico Bronya talking about what a year. This was amazing. But I'm not going to think that on October 19th. And to your point about the Dodgers being the better team, they've looked like the better team. They've got a lot of talent. But here's what's complicated about this. Tommy would bring this up for a while, and it was always a really good point, as annoying as it was. Since June 1st, the New York Mets had the best record in baseball, including a better record than the LA Dodgers. Now, granted, it wasn't by a lot. It's not like the Dodgers were some mediocre team. So for a large sample size of almost 4 months, the Mets actually were a better team than the Los Angeles Dodgers.
Yeah, you're right. It was the same conversation or same mindset you had when you played the Phillies. It's like, why would you fear the Phillies? Why would you think that the Phillies are a team that's supposed to win the series when for the better part of 2.5-3 months, the Mets were actually the better team?
Right.
Yeah, the Phillies got off to a great start, but the Mets were better when it mattered. And ultimately, they won that series, and you shouldn't have been surprised. The same thing, and it's not quite the same thing with the LA Dodgers, because the Dodgers have, I mean, it's star-studded, right? You go through even like the B players, like Max Muncy. They can bomb home runs to the third level. And so it feels like the same mantra can apply. It's just a lot harder because the Dodgers have guys that are actually performing at the most critical moments of the season, whereas the Phillies, the Bryce Harpers of the world, and the Castellanos, they didn't do it.
Right.
So I think the Mets have met a match. They've met a team that is obviously good on paper, but also can play well when the pressure is highest.
And this is where I'll give you the baseball reason, because it kind of works together. And I've made this comment a lot about Aaron Judge. It's very similar. I've said to Yankee fans who are down on Aaron Judge, if you give a great player enough opportunities, eventually he's going to remind you he's great.
Right.
And he was able to do that last night, and I have confidence in that. Aaron Judge is a great player. You could sit here all day, whether you're a Yankee hater or a Yankee fan, and say, he can't handle the big moment. That's a bunch of crap. He can handle the big moment. He just hasn't had a lot of big moments for you to put on the wall. But I really believe, deep in my soul, if you give the man enough opportunities, he will come through. How does that relate to the Mets? Here's how it relates to the Mets. Last night at Citi Field, and the Mets have some pretty good players, they were 0-10 with runners in scoring position.
Mm-hmm.
The night before at Citi Field, they were 0-4 with runners in scoring position. even in game two, a game that they won, and they got the huge hit from Mark Vientos and then a huge hit late to get insurance, they struggled most of the day hitting with runners in scoring position.
Yeah.
The Mets in this series are a combined 3-for-28 with runners in scoring position. And my attitude and my belief, and really more than anything, my hope is, if you continue to put traffic on the base paths and they can do it again and give themselves the same amount of opportunities they gave themselves last night, eventually they're going to run into the big hit like I've seen them do because they're capable of it. And so I think tonight or later this afternoon, my optimism is that it'll even itself out. They'll have opportunities against Jack Flaherty, and instead of Brandon Nimmo grounding into a fielder's choice that looked like a double play, or instead of Jose Iglesias, who's not in the lineup today, striking out, or instead of Jesse Winker hitting one of the warning track, maybe today, hopefully today, somebody comes through with a big hit that changes the entire complexion of the game. Yeah. And that's where my optimism comes from.
By the way, that would feel Met-like. That would, I mean, this year Met-like, 2024 Met-like. That's what you should be expecting, is someone to come through and have a big hit when it matters most, whether it's Lindor or Pete Alonso or Mark Vientos or whoever. Hell, it could be Jesse Winker. I mean, that's who this Mets team is. And the challenge with that, not dissimilar to the challenge when we were talking about Luke Weaver, is that when you keep getting asked to do it over and over and over, and eventually you just fail at it.
Right.
And it's just the law of averages. And you fail at it at the wrong time, it ends up costing you in major ways. And for the Mets, if you fail at it tonight, it costs you the series, and you go out being gentlemanly swept by the superior L.A. Dodgers. At least that'll be the story that gets told along the way.
No doubt. Look, I've seen the Mets lose a lot of playoff series. I've seen them lose a couple of LCSs in my lifetime, 1999, 2006. I've never seen them lose a division series. I've seen them lose two World Series, as I talked about earlier. I have never seen them beaten up as much as they've been beaten up in this series. Like I said, when they lost to the Yankees in five, even Sean will admit it, every game was close. When the Mets lost to the Royals in five, same thing. Every game was close. I'm not trying to, like, make myself feel better. I'm telling you that even though it was a five-game series, I know as a fan, I was like, oh, my God, this goes this way, that goes that. We could have won this series.
Yeah, right.
It's tough to even feel that way about this series because they got destroyed in game one. They got destroyed last night. I mean, yeah, the games were close for about four or five innings, so there were moments where it was close, and then they just let go of the rope, and it gets so out of hand.
And the Mets destroyed them in game two.
They did and they didn't, because you know why? They did. The Dodgers did something the Mets didn't do in their losses, and that's put the fear of God in the opponent.
True.
Like, the Dodgers had a great opportunity to come back in that game in the seventh inning. The Mets haven't been able to do that. By the time it's the eighth inning, everybody's leaving. Place was empty last night. I had a weird decision to make last night. You know what happened to me last night, Teague?
Please tell me you didn't leave.
I did not leave.
Good.
I did not leave.
You would never live that down.
Well, let me tell you the situation, because you may disagree with yourself and say I should have left.
Go ahead.
So I brought my oldest son, Jet, to this game.
Yes,
I remember. 8:08 first pitch, and he was doing great. He scored the first 5.5 innings of the game. He's into it. By the sixth inning, especially after Mookie hit the home run, you could see his eyes. You can see it, bro.
Yeah.
It's 10:30 at night. He's eight. They're starting to move. They're getting heavy. All of a sudden, I see him kind of...
It's cold outside, which makes you kind of want to snuggle a little bit.
That's right. And I brought a blanket, and he had a lot of layers on. And all of a sudden, my adorable son just tilts over, and he's laying on my lap, and he's done.
Oh.
Tommy Lugauer saw it. How adorable was baby... I shouldn't call him a baby. He's eight. How adorable was Jet laying in my arms?
Super cute. And Evan's right. I went in to go check on him because I actually thought about Jet. I'm like, man, he's got to be freezing cold. My feet were like icicles. And I don't know if this is admirable or just weird. Evan, as his son is sleeping on his lap, still was scoring the game.
the job to be done.
Hold on. Where did you have the book?
So,
on his head?
Kind of. So he's laying down. There's a blanket over him. And I would hold the scorebook up to right, and then I would bring it back down to my, you know, body as there was no pitch being thrown. So I would hold it up. So I wasn't leaning it on him or anything. But yeah, I scored the game. But the dilemma I had was, and I'm looking at my dad, and I'm looking at my father-in-law who also came, and I'm like, they're getting killed. It's cold outside, and he's sleeping. Should we leave? But then the thought popped into my head, well, why the hell should we leave? He's sleeping. He doesn't know. It's not like I'm doing him a favor. He's sleeping. If he's up and it's 11 o'clock at night and he's getting cranky and he's tired, he's like, Dad, I can't do it anymore. Well, then, yeah, maybe as a father I have to, like, be a good father. But with him sleeping, shouldn't I just stay?
Yeah. Okay. It's an interesting dilemma. I mean, I would have been out the door because it'd been my excuse to leave. Oh, my kids sleep. I can go. But you rationalize it well. Unless he catches pneumonia or something.
Oh, don't say that.
I just want to sum up the 2024 Mets season and living a first playoff season as we have, Tiki, working with Evan Roberts.
Go ahead.
We now have two instances. One, he left his father-in-law sitting on a bench outside Citi Field for five innings so he could finish watching the Mets and Red Sox.
That did happen,
and
yes.
And two, he let his son pass out in the freezing cold with no hand warmers so he could make sure he did not score the eighth inning of a Mookie Betts at bat.
Sean, in fairness, you have two beautiful daughters.
Of course.
Have you taken them yet to either a Giant primetime game or any Giant game or a Yankee playoff game?
Only two games in their lives, a San Diego Padre game and a Red Bulls game.
All right, so let's say your oldest daughter starts to really get into it.
Yeah.
Okay, she's into it, the way Jed is into it. And she's like, you know what? Dad, I want you to take me to Sunday Night Football. Mm-hmm. And there's a Sunday Night game a year from now between the Giants and the Cowboys, and she's good to go, and Mom says okay, and you're like, this is going to be great. Daddy-daughter at a football game. And you take her. It's an 8:15 kickoff. And the Giants are getting, you guys are getting your ass kicked, okay? And she's tired. And she passes out. She loved that first half. She was into it, man. She was watching it. She was good. She passed out. What are you doing? Are you leaving a Giant game early? Or are you saying, you know what? She's sleeping. You never know in football. Maybe Kirk Cousins will lead us to a great comeback. I'm thinking of next year.
Evan, don't do this. Don't do this.
Why?
Because I made fun of you in the proper way. Don't spin it around because you know my answer. I would have done exactly what you did. The kid is going to sit there. They're going to pass out. And I'm not moving my ass.
Thank you very much.
But I also think Evan taught a very great life and sports lesson to his son, which is never quit, never give up, never walk out on your team. But there is a little hypocrisy with you, Evan.
Go ahead.
You leave net games early sometimes, especially when you have your kids, because, and I quote, well, they're mathematically out of it.
That's correct. Yeah.
Take positive Tommy out of this equation right now. Were the Mets mathematically...
No. You're never mathematically out of a baseball game. I reject that point. You're dead wrong. And Tiki knows I'm right.
Right. It's the same thing as you can mathematically be out of a football game.
Correct.
Because you're simply not going to have enough possessions to get yourself back into it. Whereas in baseball, a possession, which is an inning, could go on indefinitely.
It's why we never, like my dad taught me this, we never leave games early. Now, if you're going to ask me, did you think the Mets were going to come back? No, I didn't think it. But that's the fear of baseball is if you left that game early at 10-2, the Mets can't score 8 runs in an inning. It's happened before.
Definitely.
Now, it's unlikely, but if you miss that, that'll be your biggest regret. There are moments in basketball games, and that's only when I do it. Same thing with football, where I look at the clock. I'm like Tiki. I'm doing the math in my head. I'm doing the possessions. I'm doing everything. And I'm like, it can't physically happen. And that's when I leave. And that's not hypocrisy. That's just math.
I think it goes back to what I brought up in the beginning of this conversation, and that's you scoring the game. I think you feel like you owe it to the scorebook to stay there and write the final, out. Where in a basketball game, I'm serious, Tiki. You owe it to the scorebook that has been your lifelong friend, right? Your first love of baseball was scoring games.
Okay.
And in basketball, you don't have that. So when the Nets are down 40 in the third quarter, all right, Spencey, did you hear enough, Jay-Z songs while we're sitting here watching the game? We can head out. With the baseball game, that scorebook. That's just my thought on this.
It's a great observation. Let me retort with this. I'm going to take you through my day very quickly yesterday. So we got off the air early for the Yankee pregame show. And as I've revealed on the air, I score every Yankee playoff game. I've been doing it for 20 years. No regrets. I scored yesterday's Yankee game. I drove in my car to pick up my son and father, went to Citi Field, and we hung out in the car while he relaxed, and I watched the Yankee game, and I scored it. Now, I also knew at some point I'm going to have to stop. I got to go in. So I scored about 5 or 6 innings of the Yankee game before we went into Citi Field. And then this morning, I scored the rest of it. So sometimes you can stop in the middle like I did with the Yankees. So does that story change your theory, Tommy?
It changes my theory a little bit, but it also just strengthens how crazy you are, dude. In a great way. I love you, man.
Only you, man.
You had a pickup scoring the Yankee game?
That's right, yeah.
Okay.
Thank God it's that, not heroin. That's all I'll say.
I'm glad it's not.
Have you ever wondered what it's like to experience something paranormal, supernatural, or unexplainable? Join host Jack Wagner on the podcast Otherworld as he explores spine-chilling real stories shared by everyday people who have experienced something unexplainable. Listen each week for first-person testimony from people who have come face-to-face with something that can't just be explained away. Listen and follow Otherworld, an Odyssey podcast, available now on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.